Welcome to the A Dime Back podcast. We're joined today by our writer Megan Bard and our producer Alex Cohen. I'm Tyler Wilkinson. Today we're going to be talking about some stuff that happened since our last podcast, namely the last couple games, some problems with the referees, all that good stuff. As always, this will contain explicit language because we cannot control ourselves and we've been drinking a little. So bear with us, and if you're the sensitive type, press stop and, go do something else. So I guess the first thing we want to talk about is the last couple games that happened. I know last time we talked was right after the throbbing that UConn gave UCF. Since then, they beat Memphis, lost at home to Louisville, then beat the shit out of both Temple and Rutgers.
I wouldn't say they beat the shit out of Rutgers.
That second half, they managed to get it together.
They were the better team the entire time. They faltered. I mean, it's been a common theme with this team, how they cannot put bad teams away.
It's also worth noting that it's difficult to play in the rack.
I guess. Everyone always says that, and UConn's like only
rack.
I was looking at
the numbers, and Rutgers has put together some impressive upsets through the years at the rack.
If you had the entire metropolitan area of New York City behind you, you would beat everyone in this country as well.
Well, you know, Rutgers has the New York City market.
Yeah.
We know how important.
What, do they just play Rutgers games in all the cabs to get ratings?
Every bar in Manhattan has Rutgers on.
Every TV in Manhattan, Harlem, Queens,
the
Brooklyn,
Bronx.
The Bronx, they're all tuned in. They all love those Scarlet Knights.
That's their college
team. Nothing says Manhattan like Piscataway, New Jersey.
Like Jersey.
Yeah. But again, they do have this horrible tendency to get complacent or to get sloppy right when they should be putting their foot on their opponent's throat.
That goes back to Calhoun. I mean,
yeah.
But if you think about like the BC game, they did it in that game too. Like every time it looked like they were getting on a run, we're ready to get there, and they just couldn't put this team away that they're clearly better than, that they're playing better than, and they can't make it happen.
I guess the good news is that in these close games, they have a pretty solid record this year.
They do.
I
mean, they played a ton of close games.
Harvard, it was one that, though they did eventually kind of pull away at the end of the Harvard game,
yeah. But I mean, they lost. Even some of the games they've lost have been close. But
hey, that Florida win is looking better and better.
It sure does. It sure does. I made some really mean jokes about Rutgers that I don't regret at all. Leading up to the game, especially since my favorite Rutgers stat ever: they joined the Big East. I don't have the date in front of me. I think the football joined before the basketball. But since Rutgers joined the Big East in basketball, they never reached an NCAA tournament ever. In the history of their tenure in the Big East, they never, ever, not once, went to an NCAA tournament.
What I would also want to know is how many times did they miss the Big East tournament?
Interesting question. And I also joked how their most recognizable achievement as a basketball program is firing the coach who threw basketballs at the kids. That's like the best thing that's ever happened in their basketball program.
Oh God.
Oh man.
The counterpoint was, well, yeah, we're going to the AC, or well, they're going to the Big Ten. We're going to the Big Ten, and you're stuck in the AAC. I was like, and I'd rather.
You're gonna get your ass kicked in every game.
While
in the Big
I'm
Ten,
very,
have
very
fun.
Jealous of that, and I don't want to discount how jealous I am of that because I'm very, very jealous.
Because the Big Ten is awesome.
I would much, much rather have a winning program in a shitty conference than be the perennial doormat of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
I mean, the fans,
they're going to get their asses kicked.
They're getting
in
a
every
shitload
game.
Of TV money, which is awesome, except that does not affect fans at all.
No.
No.
It's not going to affect the program either.
You don't get a cutback, you know?
It's not like people are going to be like, yeah, so you fired that asshole who abused his players. I'm totally coming to Rutgers.
Shout Mike Rice. Shout out Mike Rice.
Nobody's coming to Rutgers.
I mean, in the Rutgers game, they seemed legitimately lost when Daniels went out. They had a hard time getting back into it, which I think both speaks to sort of the fragileness of this team, but also, you know, what Daniels provides, even though he was not shooting well and sort of ebbing and flowing all year. As soon as he was out and they had to formulate a game plan without him, they really had a hard time doing so.
That really happened in the Louisville game, too, because he got those two early fouls and spent most of the first half on the bench and then never got into his groove at all.
Well,
and the
thing that really threw us out of... Can I say us?
Go ahead.
Is it okay for me to say
we
us?
We all went to UConn.
We
it's
did.
Us.
We're all alumni.
We're all Huskies.
But the
it's
thing
fine.
That really threw them out of their rhythm was in the Louisville game was the two, you know, Ollie getting tossed. And I mean, it's interesting to see, like, you're right. As soon as there's a wrench thrown in the game plan, they just don't respond well. And you got to hope that that not responding well doesn't last, like, 10 minutes.
I mean, the Louisville game hurt me. It hurt me in my heart.
It hurt.
It was painful.
Especially for as much as the university got up for that game. And
which was great to see. That was fantastic to see how huge they made
And as much
that.
As I don't want to blame refs, I mean, that incident totally changed the game. I mean, and we were hanging in there, and from that point on, we were just...
Well, if you think about it, we're down by 10. Giffey gets fouled on a three-point shot. He goes to the line. He makes the three. We're down by 7 versus they get 4 points off of the 2 from the technical and the 2 that they scored on the possession, and now we're down by 14. That's a seven-point swing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, too, and I think we talked about this off the air a little bit, but even if KO was committed to picking up that one technical foul from Mike Stewart.
Right.
I mean, he might not have even had that thought go through his head because it was such an egregious blown call. He might have literally just flipped out, which who could blame him? But
he
even
needed to protect his players.
Even, you know, I mean, Calhoun was famous for the two picking up that one tech just to set the balance of
and it usually
officiating
worked for him.
Back. You
it
know,
really did.
Back
it would sometimes
zero.
Put the refs
I
back
mean,
on their
there
heels.
There were some really bad calls. Bad calls going both ways, but that had really taken UConn out of momentum.
Yeah.
And then KO gets thrown out. The crowd is going crazy, super hostile. And you're thinking, well, all right, well, if UConn scores 3 baskets right now and this crowd is this amped, this place is going to explode and UConn's going to be right back in this game. And instead, UConn got called for fouls on the next 2 possessions.
Yeah. It was
the entire
just so
the game was
gross.
Over at that
well,
point.
Well, and I think that that whole sequence really just totally fucked up their rhythm.
Yeah.
And it just it screwed the game.
Which sort of brings us to, so we wrote this piece this week about college refereeing and just the dismal state of it. And
horrendous.
I wrote that piece, you know, obviously the way our pieces transpire, we usually talk about them first, and it was a product of a long conversation that led to that piece being written. I actually went into that piece planning to just kill these referees and saying they're old, they're incompetent, they're not well trained, they're not doing their job, and they need to be replaced. And the further research I did, I found out the NCAA and the conferences treat these guys like shit, and they are really, really underpaid, really overworked. There's not enough equal opportunity in the game. So the young guys that you would think might be able to, you know, have better reaction time, get up and down the court faster, they're not getting the opportunities that, you know, you see guys like Mike Stewart or Jim Burr in every game.
I mean, you got to be honest. When you look on the court and you see Jim Burr, who's he's in
90.
I don't know how old he is, but I'm guessing he's at least in his mid-60s.
He's the Mr. Burns of college
referee. He looks
like
he's at least 70 years old. And this man, he's making plays, he's making calls from the wrong side of the play, yeah. From 30 feet away. He literally cannot physically keep up with the game. And you're going, this man does not belong refereeing a college basketball game. This is madness.
Well, Tyler, in your research, did you find that, you know, is the reason that this such a sizable portion of older referees, is it because they may be retired and can afford to be paid so little? And
that's part of it. I mean, a lot of these referees have to work other jobs to maintain their income, which is why every once in a while you'll hear like a little tidbit during a game like, oh yeah, here's John refereeing. He's a dentist. And you're like, wait, really? He's a dentist and he's refereeing the game? So I think not only is it just a really hard career choice because you have to sacrifice a lot to put in the requirement,
to
put in the work.
I mean, think about how many college basketball games happen in a week. It's not like you're talking NBA here.
Yep.
There's exponentially more.
On any given day, there can be 140 games on. Yep. I mean, like, that's...
There's so many games happening.
The highest working referees are calling something like 80 games in a season, which if you think
that's crazy.
You know, it's UConn's regular season is probably 32 games. They're playing 2.5 regular seasons running up and down the court the same amount of time as the players.
That's like an NBA schedule, and I don't even know if NBA refs ref 82 games.
No, they do not. And this is, I mean, that's an insane workload, and these are old dudes.
Yeah.
Like,
you kind of almost wonder, like, can you get some, like, 30-year-old AAU refs in and just, like, throw them in and see what happens? Like, would it be terrible? I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, they do not make a lot of money. The young guys make absolute shit. They do not make a lot of money at all. And the pay scales from the research, I don't want to quote any numbers because it was sort of varying on the research I found, but the older guys who are veterans make more money. But even then, I mean, they might be lucky to top out at a 6-figure income. They're not getting rich off this.
I wouldn't mind a 6-figure income, just for the record. just throw that out there.
But I was courtside at that game. That crowd was insane.
I'm so jealous that you were at
a Saturday night, 9 p.m. game at Gampel.
Everybody
before these kids have even gone back to class. So there's no homework, no exams, no papers, no anything. And all they had to do all day was drink. It was so awesome. And these fans, especially the kids, came out so hard. And if every game was like that, which, again, I mean, I don't think we want to rehash the stadium debate again.
Did you hear Dick Vitale said if I was the coach at UConn, I would play every game at Campbell?
It's crazy not to. But
when you talk about for the team's advantage, I mean, there's no question that that's what they should do. But
and I mean, every player on the team will tell you the same thing, and every player that's probably ever played in a UConn uniform since Gampel was built will probably tell you that same thing. But
even that said, you know, we would still have our gripes about Gampel too. I mean, put the students on the sideline.
Absolutely, put the students on the sideline. ESPN was there shooting their game day segment, which is, you know, it was the later of the game day segment, so it aired at 8 p.m. The game day crew was set up. So you would see the championship banners up behind them. You would see the whole sideline. So they let the students pile into Gampel an hour before game day goes live. But they're all on the sidelines behind the hoop. So Dick Vitale and Jay Billis and Jalen Rose all go live on the air. I guess Vitale's not on game day, but that's besides the point. And there's empty bleachers behind
him. Wasn't he there? I thought he was there.
He was definitely calling the game. I wasn't watching, obviously, so I don't know his role on the game
day.
But
watching the game from home, he was like a correspondent with the students.
Yeah.
Like he was like, you know, jumping in, putting
sunglasses
on.
There's some awesome pictures of him on Twitter with like a husky thing on his head. And he was having the best time.
Awesome.
He's so great.
But again, I mean, you look at just the optics of it and you're like, well, no wonder like Cameron Indoor Stadium looks that much better than a game at Gampel, because you have to wait until the camera zooms and catches the end line before you even see the students going nuts. Where Cameron, they're right on top of the court,
and they fill up
the entire camera shot. They're right in every angle. You can't even film an inbounds pass without having a kid with his finger in somebody's face.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Well, as much as I hate to give Duke any credit for anything,
we don't have to.
Fuck Duke.
But still, Cameron, I think their capacity is something like 2,000 less than Gampel, 2,000 fewer than Gampel.
Mm-hmm. English major in me approves.
Yeah, there you go. But you know, and Duke is a major, major program, and you don't see them clamoring to get a new stadium to somehow cram more people in the seats. It seems like they have some other motivations going on that kind of are more in the spirit of college athletics.
And they've built their market and they have their plan. You know, they're pulling in the same exact amount of ACC television money as Virginia Tech and, you know, Boston College, who can't fill a stadium. So they're very aware that what makes them Duke is this particular image.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, and you look at the, you know, the contrarian view of that is someplace like Louisville, which built a downtown stadium, plays all their games here. It's called the KFC Yum! Exclamation point Center.
Are you serious? Is that really what it's called?
The KFC Yum! Center.
KFC Yum! Exclamation point.
Oh, my God.
KFC Yum! Center.
And how disparative is that compared to the college basketball atmosphere? But it worked for him. It got him into the goddamn conference.
And how ridiculous is that, though,
that Louisville
is the school that's invited when, you know, at least on its surface, they're no more successful than UConn or Cincinnati.
They're not even as successful as UConn.
Well, they're certainly not as successful as UConn. They don't have the national championships that we've got.
But
furthermore, the ACC always prided itself on having strong academic schools. and
I think that was just a nice little bullet point on a resume.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, honestly, with the way UConn football fell into what's worse than mediocrity. With how far that program fell in the last couple of years, it was very difficult at the time when the ACC chose Louisville over UConn, but it's hard to look back on it now when Louisville basketball just won the national championship. Louisville football is miles ahead of where UConn
is.
Sure. Their athletic department budget is millions and millions more than UConn. Probably, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but one of the highest in the country. And to say that they made the wrong choice. I know it felt like it at the time. If you remember at the time, it came a few weeks after UConn had just beaten Louisville in football.
Right.
When Teddy Bridgewater, the Louisville quarterback, got hurt and UConn beat him. And it just felt so silly. But, I mean, there's really no question where, basketball aside, because let's be honest about this too, basketball is an addendum to this. It's not the main factor in this.
Right.
It's about money and it's about football.
Right. Which kind of kills me because if you think about it, the Big East was always premised on basketball.
Yeah.
And it created, I mean, the Big East tournament in Madison Square Garden was the best thing that happened aside from the NCAA tournament.
It's the best sporting event in this country.
I'd rather go to the Big East tournament than the NCAA tournament. I mean, me too.
For sure, there's no other conference tournament that comes even close. And the fact that that doesn't exist anymore is absolutely heartbreaking.
It's a huge bummer. Do we want to talk about the Memphis game at all?
I'll say this. I really enjoyed watching that game because even though they went into the half down, I was watching this game going, they're playing really good basketball. They're playing really tenacious defense. They look like a team that remembers how to play basketball. And you kind of felt like even though they weren't up at the half, that they were going to come back and get it together and win the second half. And they did.
And an interesting stat, I mean, for you know, UConn shot 571 in that game. Memphis shot 435. So, I mean, that's indicative of...
UConn shot 57% in the game.
They shot 57%.
That's a good way to win a basketball game.
And their free throw percentage is ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, they're shooting, what, like 87% as a team? Something obscene like that right now?
And Shabazz is really kind of leading that charge.
And he's been...
He's as automatic as it gets.
And he's been really concentrating on getting to the line more. I think it's three of the last four games he's gotten to the line 10 or more times in the game, which is exactly what this team needs, especially since... Not only are their bigs plagued by fouls, but they're not very obviously competent in the post.
Well,
I read a quote from him today, and he was talking about this, that you know he has these first halves where he doesn't take a lot of shots, and then he comes in the second half, he's driving into the lane, he gets fouled, and you get to the free throw line, and you're watching the ball go through the hoop, and that's sparking the offense, getting him to actually take the shots and get him going, because he had like 20 points in the second half of the most recent game.
Yeah,
and
I'm pretty sure.
And I think you're really seeing that's part and parcel of his game. And when you're shooting, I mean, I don't know what his free throw shooting percentage is.
It was 87% when I saw it on the screen.
It's really high. He hits almost all of his free throws.
Quick tangent. Who has the UConn record for best free throw percentage in
Allen?
A season? It is not Ray Allen.
It's not Ray Allen.
It's
is it Kemba?
Somebody you would not expect.
Is it a big man?
He's been no.
Is
he's
my boyfriend
been,
Ricky Moore?
He's a point guard. He's been kind of in the news lately.
Is it Dougie Wiggins?
It's Doug Wiggins.
It's Dougie Wiggins.
Isn't that great? I wish I had the record book in front of me. It's like 90-something percent.
Wow.
Which is so awesome. I thought it was Albert Mooring.
I looked it up.
Doug Wiggins.
I'm kind of rooting for him.
Me too.
I hope too.
He's another one of those guys we talked about last time. Guys we were really hard on when they were in college.
Yeah.
And you don't sort of take into account that these are young kids going through their own shit the same way we all went through just shit when we were in college.
I was an idiot when I was 19
of course.
Years old. I mean, you know.
I was not.
Well, you know.
That's a lie. That's a straight lie.
But that Mike Anthony piece in the Hartford Current about him getting his life together.
Piece.
Oh, that was great. That was journalism at its best right there.
That was a great piece, yeah.
You saw the best and the worst of the Hartford Current lately when...
Oh, we got to talk about that.
I don't want to throw him under the bus because I don't know him well enough, and so I don't mention his name even. But the current publishes a story saying the headline: Ward Manuel finalist for Virginia Tech athletic director position. That's the headline. That's what gets printed. You read the article, and it says a Virginia Tech blog, which, for all I can tell, is at least somewhere equivalent or below a dimeback.com, had listened to...
On its best day, it wishes it was a dimeback.
I mean, I don't want to judge. I've never read it, so I have no idea.
I don't know
but
either.
Had listened to a radio show where this guy had expounded on his, I don't know, some declared inside information of candidates, had talked about these candidates, and the blog printed them. The Hartford Current reads this blog and publishes it as a source, saying Ward Manuel is a finalist for this job, so saith this blog.
And I guess this puts us in a difficult position here because we love the legitimacy of the blog here, but at the same time...
Well, this is basic journalism.
Here's the thing. I mean, there's two points to this. One, the person who writes the article is never the person who writes the headline. However, I have been a beat reporter in my day, and when you are a beat reporter, you have a list of phone numbers of people you can call to check this stuff out. Even if it's not an official like quote on the record, you call someone up and say, hey, I got this story. Should I go with it? And if you are doing your job, the person on the other end of the line will say, no, don't do that. And if that, you're not if you're not on the right track.
And that's what boiled my blood about it, because not only did they clearly not get any sort of confirmation that this was happening, or at least nothing they could print, which if you this is kind of a problem in the first place, but you have the resources of the biggest news outlet in the state, which, by the
like
way,
the
includes
oldest
not
continuously
only,
publishing newspaper in the country.
Which not only includes The Current, which I think for the most part does a very good job with their coverage of UConn sports, and I think they've taken some hard lines against UConn when they didn't necessarily have to, which I think is advantageous for the journalism community as a whole. But you have writers that cover all of the other UConn sports, be they men's basketball or football, or a guy like Jeff Jacobs who... I don't want to tell tales out of school, but I feel like he's probably the most well-connected, well-sourced sports writer in the state.
I don't think you're speaking out of turn on that. That's correct.
And if none of those people can get anybody on the phone,
then you don't run the story.
If you can't get Ward on a text saying, we're printing this, you got to give us something or else we're going to have to run it. And if that conversation is not happening, or if they're saying, well, I'm not telling you anything, and they decide to print it anyways, that's some really low-quality journalism. I don't want to get too high and mighty about this, but, I mean, we wouldn't print that. And I when I saw it, I woke up in the morning, and it was already on The Current at 7 in the morning, and I tweeted it, and I said, these are some shitty sources. Like, I don't buy this. And then, sure enough, I mean, the cycle of competitive journalism, when you're all fighting for page views, within 3 hours, every other news outlet in the state has it up. I don't want to point them out either because I think, for the most part, again, all these guys do really good jobs. It's just the nature of the beast. And then by 1:30 in the afternoon, Ward Manuel has to issue a statement saying, I've never even talked to these people, which seems like that's the first thing you could have said, and don't write the goddamn article. And then a day later, Virginia Tech names their new AD, who was not even on that list of names.
And the thing is, like, the nature of working in a daily newspaper is you always want to get the story first. But it's not – the most important thing isn't getting it first. It's getting it right.
Absolutely.
And if you don't have it, you don't run it. And they didn't have it. And any real newsman – and I'll go with the old school term here. But any real newsman knows when you've got it, and they didn't have it. And I think that it's a failing for the reporter. It's on the editor. There's no way they should have gone with that. It's just –
I don't know. It was, to me, coming from a complete non-journalism perspective, the interesting thing that this brings up is – how we kind of all feel about, where, you know, whenever a story like this comes up, it brings up the how we feel about Ward as an athletic director. And to me, in my mind, perhaps unfairly, I always equate his tenure with, where is he going to lead us?
Mm-hmm.
What conference is he going to get us in?
Sure.
And I don't know if that's an unfair expectation or if that's a, you know, my feeling has been, if he gets us to the ACC, I'll love him forever.
I mean, it's sad that that has to be a job requirement for an athletic director. But at the point where we are, especially where UConn is, it is his job. And obviously, I'm sure he didn't even think that was part of his job when he took the job.
Right.
I think he's done a very good job.
He kind of got strong-armed in the Ali thing, and then and
he handled it well.
That's the thing. I mean, from a an ego standpoint, Calhoun kind of backed him into a corner and was like, "This is the guy, and I'm leaving right now, and here's the only person that you can use." And so he was kind of like, "All right, well, we'll see what happens." And a guy that cares more about his ego wouldn't have signed Ali to the long-term contract. And
he said all the right things during the time. He never said anything bad about Ali.
Or
the
Calhoun
entire time,
or anything.
He just said, you know, exactly what he should have, which is, this is the route we're going to take. We're going to give him every fair chance to get this job. He clearly earned it. He got the contract. He also just signed Bob Diaco to coach the football team, which he hasn't coached a game yet, but I mean, in the abstract, is there anyone who thinks that's a bad hire?
On its face,
it looks like a great hire. And I mean, it's somebody young with energy who you know, it's not a corpse. Yep. let's talk about a happy subject. Okay. Sad Jonathan.
Yay! Oh, yay! Sad Jonathan.
Who do we have? Who's the guy that we have to give a shout out to there?
Well, okay.
I mean,
so
Andrew Porter.
You
got
to thank Porter, and you got to thank Kyle Muncy, who's UConn's rock star director of marketing. I think he has an even fancier title than that. But Muncy is awesome for multiple levels. But so what happened was Porter tweets something at Kyle Muncy saying, you know, when am I going to get a t-shirt with this Sad Jonathan 1959 logo on it? Muncy tweets, if you get 100 retweets, I'm going to get the shirt made. within
5 minutes.
This was halftime.
It was straight 5 minutes.
So Muncy says, by the end of this game, you get 100. We're going to make the shirt. Before halftime ended.
It literally took five minutes. It was amazing.
A masterclass.
I retweeted it.
Social media marketing.
Of course. Alex already ordered his.
Yeah, I contemplated ordering two so that I would always have a fresh one.
I'm actually probably going to order mine tomorrow.
You could sew them together so you had a Sad Jonathan on both the front and the back of the shirt.
Yes. You know what, though? I could do without the thing on the sleeve.
That's the thing. On the sleeve, it acknowledges.
What's the thing on the sleeve? It's
acknowledging that it's some sort of heritage collection.
It says like 1959 Jonathan the Husky Dog or something like that. Which, like, so, I just want the dog so that it's inexplicable to people. I want people to look at it and be like, "What
is going on?
Is that UConn? Like, I don't even know."
I made the mistake of not hoarding the previous logo. When they went to the new one, I should have gone to the co-op immediately and like bought out everything I could have, because I have nothing with the old logo and I hate the new logo so much.
Yeah. That old logo is never going away. You can't go anywhere in the state without seeing that old logo.
That's goofy, Jonathan.
That clothing will be passed down from generation to generation. It will never go out of.
I'm thinking about a tattoo.
Out of stuff.
I have these people. They ask me about this. They're like, "Well, what's the problem with the new logo?" I'm like, "This is my real beef with it. Our actual mascot, Jonathan the dog, which is an actual dog, has always been a pure white husky,
like Samoyed style husky.
Has always been a white husky." The logo is not our. That's not my dog. That is not my dog. I don't know whose dog that is, but it's not my dog. Like, that's the real problem. You got a bunch of people who are not UConn people and Nike who are not UConn people who apparently didn't bother to check the UConn Wikipedia page to find out who Jonathan is.
They may have edited. They probably edited it by now.
Listen, our actual dog.
They've replaced the real dog.
Jonathan the Husky has a Facebook page, and he's a white dog.
Get it
together, UConn.
I don't really care at all about the new logo. I think
I'm so upset about it.
I would have preferred it be a little bit more original. Like, I think they could have taken more of a chance at it, but I don't really care. I did think what was very fascinating, we cut this out of the last podcast because it was in the middle of some libelous bullshit that we couldn't say. But Peter was talking about last time, growing up as a UConn fan and not really understanding basketball yet. You know, like, it's just something that's cultural in the state. You watch as a young age and eventually you grow into it.
Both of our parents played sports at UConn. I literally went to my first UConn game in a car seat.
But Peter was saying, and this was around the time when Georgetown was ahead of UConn in the national, standpoint. And Peter was saying how when the logos were next to each other on the television set and it was this goofy, smiling 1990s, maybe 1980s,
It was totally 1980s.
All right, shout out 80s, Peter. But, really goofy, smiling, gregarious husky dog versus scowling bulldog Georgetown Hoya, it was very clear to him at a young age who the good guys were. I thought that was a really cool little insight into growing up as a UConn fan in that particular time. That being said, clearly this is a transformative time for both the university and the athletic program, and I completely understand the desire, and obviously the money coming in with contracts from Nike and everything is probably worth it in its own right, but it would have been nice. I don't harbor any particular ill will towards the new mascot. I don't care, period, about it. I don't have good feelings or bad feelings.
I loathe and despise it.
You and many others. But I will say, it would have been cool for them to take it somewhere that would have been unique to UConn. There's nothing really that differentiates it from style of Nike.
Yeah, it looks too much like everyone else's logo. Instead of being like, if you look at the past of our logos, they didn't look like anybody else's. And I think the other problem, too, is
better or worse, because some of them were so crazy. Bad.
The one with the musket, the Minuteman one, that one's hilarious.
That's the next up in Kyle Muncy's retro heritage UConn collection.
Is that next up?
I guess I would have liked it if they kind of opened it up more. And because I think they missed a real opportunity here to bring in alumni and the people of the state and to say, all right, we're going to get a new logo because it was Goofy Jonathan, and that's okay. But we need something new, and instead of just saying, like, let's make a Nike logo for UConn, let's make a new logo for UConn.
Goofy Jonathan forever.
Oh, I love Goofy. I need some Goofy Jonathan swag. I really do. I have none.
Go to any Salvation Army in the state. You can walk out with the Goofiest Jonathan starter jacket.
If you've got some, like,
with the pockets
appropriately female-sized Goofy Jonathan t-shirts, send them my way, because I need some. I don't have enough.
Just to put a bow on this, so the 1959 vintage Jonathan t-shirt, you can go online at the UConn co-op.com. and buy it online. Or you can go to the
$14.99 $14.99
plus shipping and tax. Or you can pick it up, order it online and pick it up at the co-op. Or you could go to the co-op, although be forewarned, they are apparently selling out like
that's
crazy.
Amazing.
I read a tweet today. They only have 2X
Kyle
available.
Muncy
so
needs
giant
a raise.
Men.
We need to go, man.
So they only have 2XX. So giant men, go get your go get your.
Honestly, that was genius.
Sad Jonathan.
It's genius. I mean, way to go,
it's,
dude.
It's everything that's great about UConn basketball wrapped into genius marketing, where you can, you know, utilize and call to action this intense fan base.
Yeah,
and basically get them to pre-commit to buy your merchandise and market it for you to all of their friends who are equally as rabid. And the next thing you know, you're sold out on the internet and both and then the co-op.
And it may be
Kyle
like
Muncy needs a raise.
Let's
start a petition.
shout out Kyle Muncy's raise. But the only thing left is we've got a rematch against Houston. 9 p.m. game on CNN.
SNY?
More people would get that at least.
CBS Sportsnet, which like no, which
12 people getting
our illustrious leader of this blog does not get.
I do not get CBS Sports.
But are you going to cover
the game? I'll be at the game.
You'll be at the game.
9 p.m. Gamble Pavilion.
Yeah. I've also been told not only do a lot of people in the state not get Comcast, sorry, CBS Sportsnet, but others just don't even have it offered. Like Cox, where in the town I live in, does not offer in high definition.
Awesome.
Seems so crazy to me. First off, I pay $140 a month for cable and internet.
That's
and
gross.
I do not get the channel that the state university basketball team plays on.
That's ridiculous.
It's pretty fucked up.
It's real fucked up.
It's pretty fucked up.
I agree.
Yeah.
Now that that's established.
Approved.
But it should be interesting. UConn this year has played really bad in 9 p.m. games. I think they're 0-3.
Stanford
was a 9 p.m. game. The last Houston game, I believe, was a 9 p.m.
game.
And the Louisville game was a 9 p.m. game. So they're 0-3.
Take a nap, boys.
Yeah, I asked Shabazz about it last time. I was like, you know, you guys do the same routine every game. Is it just hard? And he was basically, he said it's a little weird that they, you know, the practice schedules change and, you know, the times when they might be, you know, getting to the stadium and everything change, but they're not really aware of it when they're on the court. So he didn't think it was an issue, but
I think
maybe it's just coincidence.
Game? Is it a Saturday?
The Houston game?
Yeah.
Thursday night.
Well, the key to this Houston game, I think, is that their big man who kind of destroyed us in that game.
Yeah, I don't remember names of anybody else.
He hit a lot of free throws.
Why would you bother learning the names of Houston's
big men? I don't care about any of them.
He hit a lot of free throws. He grabbed a lot of rebounds, a lot of offensive rebounds. You know, I think you just need a solid game out of Brima, and you need a solid game out of Daniels. I think that's kind of the key here.
Yeah, I think for as ill-prepared and unfocused as UConn looked when they went to Houston, you would assume at least that would be corrected knowing how badly they got their asses kicked, especially in that first half.
There has to be a regression to the mean here. I mean,
yeah, and I mean, if you lose twice to this bad Houston team,
that's pretty
embarrassing.
It cannot happen.
That's not good.
It absolutely cannot happen.
It's also really not good for the tournament resume.
No. Because this team's bad. Houston's
real bad.
Bad.
There's no way around that.
They've got one solid player on that team.
I'm assuming Houston will be really freaked out by seeing more than 85 people in the stands and might just curl into the fetal position.
The fact is, it is Ed Gamble, and I mean, that's great for us, but.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a UConn. There's no such thing as a
Houston player.
No such thing as a Friday class at UConn. So you kids can just get as batshit nuts as you want on Thursday night.
Rock and roll, guys.
With no repercussions because everyone knows that you don't have to go to Friday classes.
Okay. Do we want to wrap this up, Ty?
Yeah. I also want to give one last congratulations shout out to Andrew Callahan, who's the football writer for the UConn blog. He's awesome. He's one of the most in-depth, like, X's and O's football writers, period. And he writes for the UConn blog. But he's leaving to become the sports editor of the Darien News and the New Canaan News. So
congratulations.
Yeah,
congratulations.
That's a big coup for the weekly papers down there, and best of luck. All right, thanks for listening to the Dime Bat Podcast. Appreciate you tuning in. Until next time, we'll see you later.